Welcome to the Valley Outdoors Radio, brought to you by Vexus Boats, building dreams with an unequaled passion for excellence. And now, with our hosts, Eric Colson, Don Cleaver, and Ava LaRue.
Wow, wow, wow. Gotta love it. Second week of the intro, and I'm blown away.
Kinda I know. Cool. Isn't it just Ava, beautiful? It's beautiful. It's wonderful.
It's a good thing. I love it. I'm not going to complain. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Hey, big show coming today, guys. We've got a lot of things to talk about. We're going to talk about one of the first big game animals taken on it with an air rifle. I've recently been getting into the air rifle scenario. That coming on. Talk about a little bit of Minnesota walleye stocking. And Minnesota is setting to look to reduce their bag limit from 6 to 4. That and more when we return.
Avid outdoorsmen know that heading to the field without all the advantages, not a good idea. Most importantly, a stable shooting platform. Having the right platform can be critical to success. Field Optics Research is the industry leader, offering the most advanced, lightest, and stable tripods on the market. It's stability you need when that once-in-a-lifetime shot is in your crosshairs. Field Optics, the ultimate tripod for hunting, shooting, long-range precision shooting, spotting scopes, and outdoor photography.
Links to Field Research Optics available on thevalleyoutdoors.com.
Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors Radio Show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference.
Well, Ava, Don decided not to join us today, unfortunately.
You know what? We're used to it by now, right?
We can do this act alone.
But you know what? He just adds so much character to the show. So we do hope he'll be returning for Thanksgiving, you know.
Well, I think he probably will be.
Okay, good.
He may be out of the stand. Who knows? Can't tell. We don't know at this point what's going on.
Yeah, the last time we talked to him, he didn't do any sitting. So
no,
is he doing bee season or what's his deal?
I don't know. I'm not going to delve into it. All I do know is this last week I got to go out and spend some time on the water. And I will tell you, the late fall fishing is nothing less than amazing to me when I were able to get out there and really go after the walleyes in the river. It's fun. It's challenging. It really makes you think sometimes. You know, we're fishing in the Red Wing right at or near the dam, from the dam down to probably the first, the bridge that comes into Red Wing. That whole stretch is generally a really good area for walleye come fall. In fact, most of the year in summer, they obviously the walleye migrate to the lake. But one of the things that I noticed, and this is, it's one of these takeaways that you get and you're like, wow, this is a topic for the show this week. So I show up to the ramp, I'm going to go alone, and I'm launching the boat, get the boat in the water, walk down to my boat, and there's three or four guys standing there. I'm like, how do you guys do? Nothing. This is last week. You might as well turn around and go home and watch the Vikings game. This is horrible. Another guy's like, yeah, we got one, and we've been there for 5 hours.
Ugh.
And our guy's like, this sucks. This is bad. I'm like, what are you guys doing? You guys plastic? Oh, we're using blade baits. And then somebody else is, you know, using jigs and just plastics. I said, you guys do anything with live bait? He said, oh no, that didn't work. We tried that last time and that didn't work either. And I'm like, okay, so you anchored up? Oh yeah, we anchored up and then we drifted and then we did some three-way rigs and Dubuque rigs. And so if you're not familiar with a Dubuque rig, it's a jig on the bottom, then there's a three-way about 18 inches up from the jig. So the jig acts as the weight, three-way swivel, and then off the three-way swivel going back towards the away from the line, you're going to have another 24 inches, and then have a hook and maybe a twister tail piece of plastic, and they'll just sit in one spot. Invariably, again and again and again, it turns out that the fish don't want that. They want to be just have it barely moving by them, the jig barely moving but drifting. You try to find where those fish are at, and lo and behold, again, I got a limit in nothing flat and a bunch more fish, and it was a jig and a minnow. That was it. And, you know, the funny part about that, and the reason I bring this up, is a lot of times people don't listen to what the fish are telling them. There's fish there, and I watched a bunch of people, maybe one here and fish there caught. That was it. And when you consider that kind of thing going on, you need to change it up.
Right. I'm surprised and that it took them 5 hours to one either one. Call it.
Yeah.
You know. And
exactly.
Or
so,
try
you know,
something
really,
else.
And it doesn't matter whether you're what type of fishing you're doing. It just this really brought to mind when you're fishing, and I talk about this in my seminars often. Don't get stuck in saying this way is the only way. If something's not working, change it up. And one of the ways you can, a long time ago this happened, we were filming a Babe Winkleman TV show, and I laid my rod down as I caught a little tiny sauger, and I was pulling it off the line. I laid the rod down, I put my foot on the line, and all of a sudden, the rod just doubled over, and it was a 2.5-3 pounder. And I looked at the guys, and I said, guys, we're changing it up. We went back up, we put all our lines out and dragged jigs, and we caught fish like no tomorrow, instead of lifting and dropping the jig. So changing one small thing can make every single bit of difference to success or complete failure. And it's a matter of what the fish are telling you. What do they tell me? Same thing. I did the same thing when I caught a fish this last week, earlier in the week, set the rod down, let it drag, watched it. Sure enough, a nice size walleye. And again, it was a matter of they don't want much movement. So I just backed off any movement, try to keep it as little movement as possible, jigging a minnow, and it didn't work with the big minnow. They didn't want it. They wanted that medium-sized
so
minnow.
Picky.
So, yeah, well, exactly right. They want what they want. And if you want to be successful, really what it comes down to is how do you navigate that part of it? But really listening to what the fish say, because when you're looking at it, everybody coming out of there was like, the fishing sucks. It's horrible. There's nothing going. It's just bad. It's like whatever. And it's a matter of just finding the fish, drifting to find them, or, you know, working a break to find them if you want to, you know, take it a different approach. But again, all in all, let the fish tell you what they want. And, wow, what a bunch of fun that was. I mean, really, you look to the fall to have these kinds of moments and have that kind of fun. And when you're able to capitalize on it, especially with one person in the boat and the other guys are dealing with five guys in the boat, it kind of tells you you're doing something right.
Right.
And really that's where passing the word on along those lines comes into play. And I think efficiency is the other thing. So pre-tie your jigs, get an 18-inch section of line, maybe 8-pound if you're on a 10-pound main line, 8-pound with a swivel, put it around a foam. You've seen those noodles you get from Walmart, wrap it around there, put a bunch of pre-tied jigs on there, call it a day.
And, yeah, why make it more really complicated than it needs to be?
Exactly. Well, tell you what, we're going to be right back, and we're going to talk a little bit about the first big game animal taken with an air rifle, that, and other stories right after this word, these words. Great to have you back with us. Thanks for hanging in there. And, of course, we always like to have you check us out on The Valley Outdoors. And where else, Ava?
Facebook as well.
And I should say thevalleyoutdoors.com, because that's where it's
yeah,
really
get it
at.
Right. Would you? Valley.
Yeah, I know. Hey, I'm on the road. I mean, I'm like, I'm
you're half
living
here.
On L.A. Yeah. time right now.
Okay.
Yeah, well, not necessarily, but you know how that goes. But, no, feel free to check us out. Cool stuff on the web and a lot of nice stories that you can kick back and listen to, so certainly enjoy. Well, I'm coming to you guys this week from L.A. doing some sea trials with the Sherrill product on non-disclosed boats. Can't talk about it, but nonetheless, it's some cool stuff, and very impressed with the results. So it's been a good trip. So we'll be back next week, and we'll be having a good show for you then as well. But, you know, as I'm putting this together, Ava, the show, I come across occasionally, we get some reports, and I think people really need to get an idea on the hunting and shooting, and the economic benefit that comes out of it is pretty crazy. Together, hunters and shooters are responsible for more than $106 billion in retail sales.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And $133 billion in economic growth. And there's 1.3 million jobs and 80.5 million in wages and income. That's just...
There's revenue. Yeah.
It's crazy. And, you know, it covers a wide area of elements, right? So a lot of people that are involved with this, in being able to quantify this, hunters and shooters, you know, really looking at providing input to the local, state, and national economies and what it really means for those sports, and really what kind of a legislative impact, meaning, you know, if somebody's looking at changing a law, they need to understand how it can impact if it comes to the hunting and shooting sports industries, and what can happen. I think they need to look in the overall scenario and what it does not only for the economy, but what it also does for the natural resource, because a lot of the dollars go to support and manage the wildlife resources
as
across
it should.
The country,
mm-hmm.
as it should. And, you know, it's been being lost in special interest groups that have absolutely nothing to do with the hunting or the animals and the wildlife itself, you know, whether it's habitat or otherwise. But just some cool facts that I think you and the audience might be interested in. The overall impact of hunting itself, the revenue generated by hunting is higher than the gross domestic product of 121 countries.
What?
And that's in the U.S. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Hunters contributed nearly $38 million a day in state, local, and federal taxes that go to support wildlife agencies and conservation. Hunters generated more revenue, $45.2 billion, than nationwide. United Airlines, $43 billion. Dow was $43 billion. And Tyson Foods was $42 billion. Just the hunting revenue. And that's
awesome.
It's crazy to me. Hunting industry also supports 540,900 jobs, more than any U.S. company outside of Walmart and Amazon. Retail sales is nearly equal that to the combined system-wide sales of both Starbucks and McDonald's combined.
No way.
Which
that's surprising.
The part I love about the story is it brings it into what we would never even imagine as far as how that, you know, the dollars come into play. They're also revenue generated by hunting is 10 times more than revenue of the top 10 most valuable NFL teams combined, $4.5 billion. Hunting generates more revenue than the worth of the top 10 most valuable MLB, the Major League Baseball teams combined also. Now, we've talked, target shooting is a growing sport within high school as well. As this, the normal, everyone is just really taken on to target shooting, whether it's trap or skeet or pellet guns. We'll refer to that a little bit later, but it's more than the gross domestic product of seven states just in the target shooting. Contribution to U.S. GDP from activities target shooters is greater than the overall GDP of 132 countries. Even that is amazing. Target shooters outnumber the population of every U.S. state in Washington, D.C., except for California.
Wow.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Target shooting generated more revenue than Cisco, Christian Dior, Lockheed Martin, or HP at $61 billion. And last but not least, revenue generated by rifle shooting is over 10 times the combined gross revenue of the top 25 box office movies of 2020. How about that for crazy?
It's all good things, I think.
There's no question. And, you know, Ava, one of the things, having worked a lot with communities and getting fishing tournaments to the communities that I've done, and with research and how does a dollar travel within a community once outside money comes in, it actually travels. Some people say it's 7 times. I used 5 times as a rotation within the community. So if $1 is spent, it's actually worth $5 in community impact into that as it rotates around throughout the community. So, you know, when you look at the dollar spent in hunting and target shooting, the people are traveling for that, whether it's South Dakota or otherwise, you know, it's a solid impact, positive impact for everywhere that people are traveling to go to do those sports. So fishing is no different, but it's really amazing to see those impacts, and it's pretty impressive nonetheless.
Yeah, and that it goes to the motels that people are staying in, where they're eating,
restaurants. Yeah, and people like to eat out. That's going to be the deal, because they don't cook. Yeah, they don't cook
don't
when they go
cook.
Hunting, that's for sure.
Wait on me, please.
For the most part, I should say. It's nice to, if you do have a good cook with you, it's okay to let them do their deal. So I'm not going to complain about
that. I will wash
that,
dishes all day, but make me something
exactly.
good to eat, please.
Exactly. Well, let's shift gears for a second. And since Don's not here, he has a tendency to give me some grief about it, but some big news within the snow sports world. Obviously, many of you can recognize the name Lindsey Vonn, having been a multi-winner of medals in the Olympics and World Cup as well, formerly one of the winningest and still is one of the winningest skiers in the world. Michaela Schifrin is the leader at this point, having won the most gold medals and World Cup wins. But nonetheless, Lindsey Vonn had a partial knee replacement and was considered out of competition, and always an amazing person to watch skiing. She put it all on the hill, and with her involved in the speed sports, meaning the downhill and super G, the downhill being the fast and crazy speeds, go as fast as you can. The other super G and GS being more technical. She actually, believe it or not, is making a comeback. She's going to be joining the U.S. team again this year and will be skiing for the U.S. ski team. Big news, big news. There was a lot of rumors coming out with Lindsey Vonn maybe coming out. And of course, a lot of skeptics saying, nah, this is just a ploy. She's got a great gig with a ski area as an ambassador to one of the top ski areas in the Montana, Idaho area. Nope, it's true. Lindsey Vonn is coming back, and watch for further news from that. But it's going to be exciting to see her back out. Her passion is a driver, and she is absolutely passionate and an absolute physical specimen. She is an absolute powerhouse. So big news there. Also, big news, first race of the year on the World Cup. And lo and behold, just brought up Michaela Schifrin's name before. She also has won the first slalom event, making it 98. Again, piling on her total of World Cup wins and fast approaching that 100 mark as a goal. And she this year has opted not to be in the high speed or in the speed regiments, meaning the downhill and super G, but remaining in slalom and GS. It does provide more longevity within the body, as they say, and it doesn't take its toll as much. And she has struggled with that in the past years, last year especially with an injury and coming off of one of the speed sports. So really positive news from the U.S. ski team on that, and looking forward to seeing Lindsey Vonn out there. So kind of cool stuff as a side note. But
yeah, I know you're looking forward to 2026 already for the Winter
Olympics,
on
the Olympics,
man.
Yeah. There's nothing better. I love it. Bring on the luge, the guys, the crazy guys laying back and staring down between their feet as they go down the hill in control. You know, that's kind of crazy, but a lot of good stuff going on in the Winter Olympics. It's big for my side of it. I totally got into the Summer Olympics this year, I got to tell you.
Oh, yeah. It
was, I couldn't believe it. I was like, God, when it was over, I was just kind of depressed.
I was so happy that they had beach volleyball right at the Eiffel Tower, because beach volleyball is my favorite to watch, and it was like the perfect spot. So
that was pretty cool. I did enjoy it. But nonetheless, Olympics 2026 is going to be in Italy in 2026. So we'll Watch the World Cup this year, though. It's going to be a blast. So let's jump into the story we talked about. It's a Wisconsin-made 45 caliber air rifle, claims the first big game animal. Recently, Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers signed an air gun bill, Wisconsin Act 115, this last March. It was a matter of time before someone was used an air-powered shotgun to shoot a turkey since spring turkey season opened up. Of course, that happened. The next question was, how about a deer, elk, or bear? Well, gentleman out of Milton, Wisconsin, Don Fitzmaurice, had the distinction of being the first person that we know in Wisconsin to shoot a big game animal with an air rifle. He shot a 180-pound Bayfield County black bear.
Oh, my goodness.
Hunting. Yeah, pretty awesome. He shot the bear with a Wisconsin-built Serpent Arms 45 caliber air rifle, and it was loaned to them from Serpent Arms, company of machining assembly facilities right in Juneau, Wisconsin. 85% of the components are machined on site. The barrel is machined in Milwaukee. But yeah, it was the 28-gauge shotgun came online in December, and they did the started the rifle barrel last November. Played with a lot of different calibers. They said it can hold a 2-inch group or better at 50 yards and touch bullet holes with it. And they've had a lot of practice with that particular rifle. He said that it can surely kill big game out to 75 yards. They said it can probably go further, but we don't want people pushing it. They recommend using a 285 grain 45 caliber muzzleloader bullet. You can recognize them right away, the blue tip and a blue base, and 300 PSI, that's pounds per square inch blast, pushes it out at a muzzle velocity 840 feet per second, which is pretty darn good. If you look at a normal shotgun of that caliber, it's going to be about very close to the same, if I'm not mistaken. But the air charge, get this, the air charge is a buttstock tank. It's 4,100 PSI, and each shot, you'll see roughly about a 300 PSI drop in the tank pressure. And yeah, Serpent Arms, they've got their own website. It's kind of cool when you think about it. I mean, an air rifle. I just bought an air rifle myself with a pellet gun, and they've come so far. I mean, you're getting 1,000 feet per second with an air rifle with a brake barrel that charges the cylinder for the air pressure. And you can shoot amazing groups with these things.
Interesting.
And, yeah,
I've never tried.
It's fun with the little air rifles, but the air rifles have gotten to the point where they're actually looking like a regular target rifle as a normal bullet with charge rather than a pellet. And, 17 caliber or .77 pellet, and it shoots amazingly well. So pretty cool stuff. I think you're going to have a lot more coming out of this coming down the road here. I think people have looked at ammunition as a whole, and it's pretty expensive when you're trying to get the shell cartridge and bullet and availabilities, but it very well possibly be, this could be an option that would be very, very cool. So
interesting
stuff.
Serpent
Arms steps out into that realm. So kind of a neat deal. I think, and in my mind, one of the things that comes to play is, I think people that don't like to have a big, big kick or the sound or everything else, I think that's going to be a big thing for them as well. So kudos to those guys, Serpent Arms. Way to go, gentlemen and ladies over there. Really nice step in the direction. It's expanding the normal thoughts and direction what you do with firearms. So pretty cool.
Absolutely.
I love it. I love it a lot. It's great. Just coming out of Minnesota DNR, they're stocking larger than normal walleyes following a mild winter. The Ortonville area walleye rearing ponds and support Minnesota stocking the walleye fingerlings and yearlings are larger and heavier than normal in 2024. That's a statewide trend following the mild winter we had, as many across the state are seeing. We've got a lot bigger fingerlings this year and a lot of yearlings with open water that we had last year. Very little winter kill. So normally it's anywhere from 10 to 20 fish or a pound. However, this year the ratio is more like 5 or 6 to a pound. That's crazy difference. I mean, amazing. They said they're 2 to 3 times bigger, and it's bigger than we typically see when they plan for stocking programs. So that's awesome. Ensuring there's enough poundage to quantify a fish stocked into a lake, they use a tool called the power curve. Curve calls for 1 pound of fish per acre, and it's a tool used annually. I never heard of that before. Have you ever heard
Me
of that
neither.
Before?
No.
I mean, looking into stocking, it's something we're probably going to look at. It's not typical for us to see larger fingerlings, but across the board, it's like almost all of them are quite large in size. The Oregon billed rearing ponds have experienced large kill in the winter of 2022, so the rebound in the Ortonville system is great to see. Most ponds died in that 2022 season, and ton of fingerlings last year that translates into a fair amount of yearlings fish this year. Warm, dry fall, the NR is not as rushed as it was last year. Wrap up stocking as October came to a close with less than 25% or 20 pounds still needed to be stocked. So, cool story. I mean, really, when it comes down to it. By the end of the season, the DNR will have stocked 90,000 pounds of walleye around the state, an increase from about 85,000 last year. And there's still 20,000 fish that still need to be dropped into lakes. From around a third of that 20,000 remaining will be stocked by contracted private fish and farmers. So when the fishing is done, a lot of these areas are going to be stocked around 40,000 fish. So I don't know, Ava, it's pretty cool stuff. What do you think?
Yeah, great news to end the show.
I think it is as well. And, you know, coming from L.A., I'm looking at beautiful weather out here. It's warm. It's beautiful. We are the Valley Outdoor Show, and we appreciate you guys listening, and we hope you hang out there for next week. We talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Valley Outdoors Radio, brought to you by Vexus Boats, building dreams with an unequaled passion for excellence. Catch us next week, same time, same place. Have a great day on the water or in the field.